You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey there, everybody. My name is Mason West, and this is Bare Bones Thanksgiving Edition. So today's going to be a little different. We're not doing the Thursday episode. Maybe you're listening to this on Thursday as you're cooking your turkey or whatever is going on, or right before you enjoy some of the games that are going to be happening. But we decided that we weren't going to do a show on Thursday, let everyone spend time with their families. However, the Bears, of course, had something a little different planned. And so I am doing a little special one right now, just popping in, giving a little context to what's going on with Justin Fields. There's a lot of confusion going on in terms of what happened during the game, what these last couple days have looked like, and potentially what's going to happen going forward regarding a shoulder. So you have a little short one here for you, just for the holiday. And so first we're going to start quick reaction to that Falcons game. Overall, disappointing game, but for me, it hit a little different than the Lions game. Now, if you listen last week, you know, I talked with Will, had him as a guest. Thanks again to Will DeWitt for popping on. You should be following him if you are not. That's at Will DeWitt. The L's are ones. It's a whole thing. But, you know, and one of the things that we talked about was how that Lions game was disappointing in terms of how it ended. This one was disappointing in terms of how just basically the offense looked from beginning to end. Now, I got to give the Falcons credit because they played the Bears run game and play action very, very well. You know, Justin still had his yards on the ground, but, you know, they didn't let him take over the game in that first half. And he had to really work for all of those yards. And you saw it take a toll later in the game, as we'll get to. Now, you know, the Bears also didn't adjust very well. Once they saw how the Falcons were playing the run game, how they planned to contain Justin a bit, you know, they didn't take advantage in the passing game. It was one of the more rough passing games that have happened as of late. And we see how important the run game is to the passing game in terms of the defense honoring what Justin can do with his legs. Now, you know, he did have in that fourth quarter a couple really good throws at the beginning on that last touchdown drive in order to tie it up. But that was were few and far between. And again, it wasn't consistent throughout. There were not a lot of opportunities. I think that the wide receiver separation leaves something to be desired. And the offensive line. You know, you missed Tevin Jenkins out there. You really did. We'll talk about him in a second, too. But, you know, Schofield didn't have the best game either. You know, there were times where Sam Mustipher, he's been a bit of a scapegoat as of late, but there were still some times that he just missed some assignments, didn't seem like he knew what he was doing, and Justin was running for his life. This Falcons pass rush, this pass defense, was not very good. You know, they have not been able to pressure the quarterback all year, and they haven't defended the pass all year, yet the Bears were not able to get anything going in the air. So, you know, when your team isn't good, you also can't give up special teams plays like that Patterson kick return. Technically, the defense did well enough in order for the Bears to win, right? I mean, the Bears offense outscored the Falcons offense. It's just that kick return sealed their fate. It's tough, you know, but it's one of those things you might be able to say tank loss, move on. But, you know, obviously then what happened with Justin leaves it a bad taste in your mouth. Now, one other thing that I wanted to talk about that I had some people asking me about is what was going on with Tevin Jenkins. How can you be available but not playing? Now, that's a big difference, right? It's like if you get sent back to work part-time and your doc says, well, give this note to your boss and they have to let you take extra breaks and things of that nature. Like, you can adjust how much you're doing at work. You can't do that on the football field, right? You can't go halfway. Because now all of a sudden, that's how you let up a big play. Someone gets hurt, something of that nature. So Tevin was there in case of emergency. You know, the hope was that none of the guards, Cody Whitehair, Schofield, needed to come out of the game, get hurt. But if he needed to, you know, if he needed to pop in because maybe Schofield got hurt and take over the fourth quarter, he could do that. If he had to come in for a couple plays, a little series, he could do that, but not take the toll of a full game. So keep looking for Tevin to come back soon. It's not going to be an all year thing where we're playing this game, but you know, that was why he was available on the sideline, but wasn't actually starting. So first thing with Justin we got to talk about is the hamstring. You could tell the hamstring was a problem. Now, he didn't have a strain. It wasn't, you know, no tear or anything like that, but he was cramping. There's a couple of different things that go into that. Sometimes it's going to be something as simple as where you're playing. You know, you're playing inside in Atlanta. You know, maybe there's a little bit of dehydration going on. The temperature change is going to be a little different for you. So that's always going to factor in, which does make it interesting that the Bears opted to practice outside as much as they did this week. You know, go inside, get used to the elements, make sure you got your body's ready for, you know, being in an indoor facility that's temperature controlled. It's going to be a little warmer than what you've been playing as of late. And another big part of it, Justin said it last week, he has heavy legs. He's had to adjust in terms of some of the training, whether it's, you know, we talked with Dr. Michael Risher in terms of what his training has looked like. So go back and listen to that episode if you haven't. That was a really good one that we did a couple weeks ago. But, you know, one of the things that they always emphasize with hitting top speed in practice every single week a couple times, that's gotten pulled back a bit. It's had to because of how much he's running in games. Now, you know, when you take that into consideration, that's going to be really important just because he went ahead and had what I believe it was 20 carries, 18 to 20 carries this game. That is a lot, especially that many weeks in a row. I mean, that's a running back workload. And when you're having to literally touch the ball every single play, you know, because when you're a running back, maybe in even a very prolific offense, you're going to run 50% of the time as the end result of that play, maybe. But even then, you know, you get breaks. You're going to rotate with another running back. You're going to have a pass play where, no, you're not sprinting downfield at full speed. You're going to be have a run play where, yes, you're running hard, but it only generates 3 yards. It boom, boom, boom. Justin doesn't have that luxury, right? Justin is receiving the snap, having to navigate the pocket, and those little steps navigating the pocket are huge. And that's not even taking into consideration some of the bigger ones, like the design runs, and then when he has to navigate the pocket in an unplanned play. There is that one pass to Equanimeous St. Brown that comes to mind on that final touchdown drive that they were able to put in. Next Gen Stats had him having run 30-something yards. That's a lot. A lot of wear and tear. And so now when you have that, you have cramping. Really what's happening in that cramp, it's not, again, it's not a strain or anything like that, but the muscle's screaming for some help. It's basically saying what you're asking me to do right now, I'm not fully prepared to do. Give me a little help, whether it's taking a break, resting. You saw he was getting stretched on the side, you know, he was getting as much of liquids as he could. Now, the reason that's important is A, because over time, there has to be an adjustment in terms of what's going on with his workload. It's far, far too much. They went from having no quarterback design runs, you know, I think like one or two at best a game, to having as many as 12 to 14 a game. That's too many. But that's going to affect other things. So now look at the play where Justin injured his shoulder. You can see that as he's going to the left on that play, the first play of that drive, he's not at full speed. He's the running mechanics are off. His gait is not what he wants it to be. Normally he'd be able to get that corner around the corner, run out of bounds and never not really fully get touched. In this instance, right, he took full brunt of the contact, landing directly on that shoulder. And now that's going to bring us to what is really happening in terms of Justin's shoulder. So I'm going to bring in this picture here. You're going to see that little background here. So shoulder girdle really made of four joints here. You got your sternoclavicular joint, which is going to be where that chest bone, the sternum, and the clavicle come. You're going to have your acromioclavicular joint, your AC joints. That's going to be one that we're going to discuss heavily here. That's where the clavicle and the acromion, it's the little front nodule of the scapula as it comes forward. Your glenohumeral joint, that's what people mainly think of as your shoulder joint. And lastly, your scapulothoracic joint, that's actually on the backside. And that's going to be where the scapula comes in contact with the ribcage. So all four of those are very important. On first viewing of the replay, I thought it was an AC joint sprain. There's a few reasons for that. One, he lands directly on the left shoulder on the front side of that. That's more or less your traditional mechanism of injury when it comes to an AC joint sprain. Right after the play, you see him walking and he's reaching underneath his shoulder pad and he's rubbing. And that's really a common thing you'll see when it's going to be an AC joint issue versus something like a glenohumeral or a dislocation. And also his arm was freely swinging during that gate pattern. As you walk back to the huddle, you can see that, you know, again, he's rubbing, but that left arm is swinging back and forth. If it was a subluxation or dislocation, normally that arm is going to kind of dangle on you. You're not going to want to swing that arm. So you're going to hold it close to your side just to try to protect it a little bit, or you're going to do that arm dangle kind of walk. And that's because, again, if it's dislocated, it is out of the socket. So with, for all those, and then for all those reasons, that's really why I thought it was an AC joint sprain. And then being able to continue to, if it was a dislocation, finishing the game, how he was able to, even in the immense amount of pain he was, would be much, much more difficult. And also on the way back, when you look at that video that was posted of him riding to the x-ray, you could see that there's a little bit of a bump at the top of the shoulder. Now, that would happen when that clavicle comes away from that acromion and lifts upwards. And that's where that really that AC joint sprain or potentially shoulder separation, which also we're going to talk about. If it was dislocation, it would just look very different. Now, we didn't see that there was a need for a reduction. And reduction is if you had a dislocation, you having to actually get back in the socket. But that's now where we have to kind of have this conversation of what's one versus the other. So you can see in this picture that I pulled up here that we have a dislocation on one side and we have a separation on the other. And if you're listening to this in podcast form, I implore you to go back, check out the video. I'm going to try to describe this in words the best I can. But on one side, basically, you can see that there's this white part right here on the scapula, basically near the rib cage. That's going to be your glenoid. Basically, that's where the humerus, the arm bone sits. In a dislocation, it comes away from that. You're going to have tearing or stretching of all these ligaments that sit around here. In an AC or shoulder separation, as you can see in this other picture where the circle is, that clavicle lifts up and away from that little nodule of that shoulder blade, the acromion. And really, that humerus is not part of it whatsoever. Big, big difference. So another thing you want to think about is, well, what is a subluxation? So a subluxation is going to be when the shoulder, that humerus, comes away slightly from the glenoid, from that little cup of the shoulder, but it doesn't come all the way out. Now, in this one, it comes out a little bit and pops right back in. Not as much to worry about. Long-term, yes, there's some integrity issues, some stability issues, but there isn't as much tearing of any of the ligaments or the tendons that are trying to help that area, so you don't have to worry about it quite as much. Now, if you're going to talk about a shoulder, again, dislocation, a couple different types, anterior, when it moves forward, completely away from that fossa or glenoid, or posterior when it's moving backwards. So it really does have to come all the way out of the glenoid too for it to be considered dislocation, and it doesn't return back in right away. Often you'll also see some bone damage with a dislocation as that humerus, that shoulder bone, hits the glenoid. So now all of a sudden you got to wait for that bone to heal there. So again, the capsule ligaments or labrum can be stretched, torn, or detached from the bone during a shoulder subluxation or dislocation. When the head is back in place, these structures can heal in a loose or stretched position, and that can increase the risk of future episodes of a dislocation. With each additional episode, further tissue damage can occur, increasing the tendency towards future instability. Now, if you have a labral tear, when that happens, shoulder instability can occur when the labrum is torn or is peeled off of the glenoid. And that can occur after shoulder has dislocated, shoulder trauma, or as a result of repetitive motion, like if you're throwing a baseball over and over. The shoulder joint is held with suction power. So that humerus is held in that glenoid, in that fossa, with this little vacuum. So the glenoid labrum, it's a fibrous cartilage-like material, and joint fluid work together to create a suction cup holding effect. And that effect is on the humerus head, pulling it in. The glenoid labrum essentially deepens the socket by acting around that shallow cavity. So the joint fluid, through this kind of adhesive, cohesive relationship, holds the joint together even under a lot of stress. So this is like if you wet a suction cup and stuck it to a wall. So that's really important because that's very different than the hip or the knee, right? The hip or the knee, it's a very, very deep little setting that the bone sits in. But it's a trade-off. You know, the deeper that it is, yes, you get a lot of stability just because it's sitting deeper in there. However, you don't get as much mobility. And so you really need that labrum to create that vacuum, because as soon as you get it compromised, if you get a tear of any of the ligaments in the shoulder, now you don't have that vacuum anymore. And so that's really why people get those repetitive dislocations.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
So now what are we looking at in terms of a separation? And I believe, and also by from what I've seen in the video and also what some of the reports have been and trying to piece things together, that Justin has a shoulder dislocation. And I can't make that any more I can't state that anymore. I do not know what Justin has, right? You know, I'm not the only people that know are Justin, the Bears staff, who are looking at his MRI and looking at his x-rays. What we can do the best we can is to analyze what we're seeing here by the video, by his movement patterns during and then after the game, and then using what we have as common knowledge in terms of how these injuries occur. So again, a separated shoulder is different than a dislocation, being that it involves the acromioclavicular joint and not the glenohumeral joint. So you have a couple different, you can see in this picture here, and again, if you're not able to see this, I would implore you to check it out. Top left, we have a normal one. Everything looks hunky-dory, fantastic. This grade one, you can see this little line forming in the ligament between the clavicle and the acromion. And then that starts to get worse to a grade two, and then a grade three. And in a grade three, you can start to see that some of these other ligaments get involved too, some more damage. Therefore, you're going to end up ultimately needing more rest. So again, why do I think it is the AC joint and not dislocation? By the way he fell, the way he held his shoulder, he was pretty much free swinging and rubbing near the clavicle. Again, that video showing as he was being carted away that there was that little elevation of the clavicle, and normally in a dislocation, the arm would dangle. And again, ultimately, this still is happening at the AC joint. So whether it's an AC sprain or you're talking about separated shoulder, the terms start to get a little bit synonymous, but really you're talking worrying about what the grades are. Because the injury is a disruption in the suspensory mechanism that keeps the arm suspended from the clavicle and close to the chest, it can be very disabling. The shoulder separation occurs along a spectrum of progressive injuries, ranging from a sprain or a partial tear of the ligaments, making that the least severe, to a complete tear of all of the major ligaments that support the joint, resulting in more severe injury or separation. So there's multiple different ways that you could potentially treat this. You can usually treat it conservatively. You're going to let the ligaments in the labrum heal itself. The ligaments in the labrum are passive stability. You're going to try to really increase your active stability. So that's all the muscles around the shoulder. So your deltoid, your pectoralis, a lot of your rotator cuff muscles, like your teres minor major, your inferens supraspinatus, and you're really going to try to get those to do a lot more work to allow for those passive structures to heal longer. So in a dislocation, right, I mean, if it's bad enough, you're looking at surgery. That's kind of like, you know, a Jalen Johnson, where he got that one special surgery in order to create that little bony block, almost like a door wedge, in order to help that, prevent that from dislocating. Anthony Miller was another individual that went through a lot of those things. Even Mitch Trubisky, right? He had shoulder instability issues, and he had to wear a harness afterwards just to make sure that the shoulder didn't dislocate. And I cannot emphasize this enough. This is not what Justin Fields has. Justin Fields does not have, from what I'm seeing and from what I'm understanding, a dislocation. So he's not going to fall into that Mitch realm. He's not going to fall into that Anthony Miller realm. For a separation, more often than not, you also go very conservative. You're just going to rehab, and you're potentially very, very bad ones, like that grade 3, grade 4, you might do surgery in the postseason, but that's more of a cleanup, go in arthroscopically kind of thing, not as robust of a surgery. And if you do go the surgical route, the chances of instability is pretty low, like 3% to 5%. If, in fact, this is a low-grade separation, Justin can absolutely play sooner rather than later. He could play as soon as next week. Operative word being could. I'm not sitting here saying that he should or that I would expect that. It's his non-throwing shoulder, and he could take a game-day injection to play. If this was a dislocation, again, he'd have to wear a harness, and running, taking hits would be a bit scary. But with the fact that it is, I believe, a separation, you can take that injection, which is basically going to numb it out entirely, and you're really not going to have much pain during the game. He can run as much as he would really like to or feel comfortable with, because a lot of those hits, the impact, you wouldn't be as worried about. Now, keep in mind, it still potentially could be worse during the game. I mean, right? How did he hurt it in the first place, being tackled out of bounds? So that could happen again. And yes, that could ultimately result in some more damage to the area. However, that's not something that I would be super, super worried about. Really, in all reality, the soonest I would expect him back would be the Packers game. And that's if Justin, the Bears training staff, the Bears front office, the coaches, everyone involved felt good about where he was at, about his safety, that this was not going to impact him long term. Now, again, if it were me, I would say, hey, Justin, let's wait until after the bye week. You're not playing for a playoff spot. I do think it's important for Justin to continue to get some reps and grow. I mean, even if it is with this offensive line and with the weapons he currently has, seeing more defenses, throwing the ball more, that's all going to add up. Because the only way you really get better is, honestly, to go out and do it. You know, doing it on air, doing it against your own team in training camp, doing the visualization stuff, it only goes so far. So ultimately, if he could get out there after that bye week, be more or less healed up, because this isn't going to be fully healed this year. It's not. It's a 5 to 6 week injury before you get fully healed. And if he is playing, you know, you're causing little derangements there. But he could be in a place where he's feeling pretty good, I would say, after that bye week. And then he could finish out the rest of the year, get some more reps, get some more practice, and go into next year, hopefully behind a more solid offensive line, and hopefully with a better group of wide receivers that can give him some more options. Because as of right now, that's a problem. So yeah, I would personally rule him out of the Jets game. Packers game is a hefty maybe. Most likely return is after the bye week against the Eagles. Now, in terms of that Jets game, not going to do a heavy preview for that one. It's just not, there's a lot to going on here with the holiday, focusing on just getting Justin, like, oh, that's the biggest focus here. So just going to do a little quick preview of that game and then move on. Jets are not in a great place. It's interesting. The Jets are winning, but it's kind of in spite of their quarterback, right? One of the big news aspects going around right now is the conversation of how different Zach Wilson and Justin Fields are handling being blame put on them, I guess you could say, right? Zach Wilson was interviewed and asked, you know, this more or less, well, you know, how do you owe your defense an apology? And he was like, no, I don't. And that didn't go over well. You know, the defense, some of the defense guys in the locker room apparently took issue to that. The New York media ran with that. And right now, Zach Wilson is in the hot seat. You heard that even when Saleh, the Jets head coach, was not committed to, you know, having him be their starter. Now you flip that, and reports are that Justin went into the locker room afterwards and apologized to the defense and, you know, put that on him, to saying, hey, like, you guys, you put us in a position to win this game and I let you down. And a lot of the players in the locker room responded to that, again, by, according to these reports, and essentially were like, no, Justin, don't worry about it. Now, that couldn't be any different in terms of responses and from the quarterbacks and then how the team is receiving that. That's one of the reasons that I'm very confident in who Justin ultimately is going to be as quarterback. He's got the raw skills. He's got the leadership qualities. It's just about continuing to learn, to move forward, and to surround him with the right talent. Now, this Jets defense is tough. It's scary. They're the reason, one of the reasons why the Jets have the record they do. They made Mac Jones look and feel silly last week in that Patriots-Jets game. And that's also one of the reasons I'd be very hesitant to consider Justin playing next week against the Jets. That's just more hits than he needs to deal with right now. You know, the Jets are missing Breece Hall. He's out for the year with the ACL. They still have a pretty good back in Michael Carter. They have some interesting weapons around. Garrett Wilson is a pretty solid rookie receiver. It's going to be an ugly game. I mean, honestly, it's going to be, I think, a Trevor Siemian and then some combination of Joe Flacco or Mike White. Kind of depends on where I don't think Zach Wilson should play. I don't know. I mean, we'll have to wait and see what they do there. But, you know, what are the Jets thinking? I mean, they're not going to just give up on their second overall pick. That's a lot of draft capital, unless you're hoping you can trade him for something else. But I don't know. So do you really roll out with Joe Flacco, who was playing really well and probably gives you a better chance to win? Do you roll with Mike White, who's the younger person? And he had some moments last year with Zach Wilson out. It's going to be rough. But if Justin's not playing, I'm taking the Jets points and running with it if you're going betting wise. Overall, it's going to be a really tough game, whether Justin plays or not, moving the ball against this defense. With Trevor Siemian at quarterback, I mean, you're going to probably see some better timing throws. There might be, you know, some slants. There might be some of those 3 to 5 step drops that look good initially, but there's going to be a lot of three and outs. I just can't imagine it going great. But so, yeah, if I was picking, I'm picking the Jets in this one. That's all I got for you. Nothing, like I said, not too crazy. Just wanted to give you some general information regarding Justin and the shoulder. If there's ever any questions, always feel free to reach out on Twitter. I'm always willing to answer those at West Sports PT. Hopefully you're able to learn a little something about the shoulder and what Justin's dealing with. But, you know, have a great holiday. One thing I guess I'd leave you with, something I'm thankful for in this Thanksgiving season. I am thankful for Justin Fields. And as a branch of that, I'm thankful for all of the things that led to him being here. You know, as much flack as we give Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace, all the decisions, whether they were good or bad, ultimately led Justin to be a part of this team. The last couple weeks have been something I've been very thankful for. It's hard covering and talking about and being a fan of, and I'm sure everyone listening to this can attest to, a bad team with no future and no excitement. And Justin has provided that these last couple weeks, right? I mean, even if it hasn't been necessarily quintessential what you think want your quarterback to be doing, it's been fun, you know. And I do hope that when he does come back from this injury, the Bears have proven, like, yes, can we just run Justin to death 12 to 20 times a game and be close in games? Yeah, they've proven that. What I want them to do is say, okay, we know we can do that. What else? Are there other things we can do? Other types of plays, or, you know, other packages we can put together that we can really use to help Justin succeed. So anyway, again, hopefully all you have a great holiday. Hopefully you enjoy all the games that are on. I'm personally, I think, most excited for that Bills Lions game, just because NFC representation, and it's going to be really interesting to see what the heck the Bills are doing right now, because they seem to be falling apart. That'd be another crazy game. And also interested in the Cowboys game, because I'm playing Tony Pollard in fantasy and hope him and Dak do terrible, because I'm playing both of them. So have a great evening, morning, afternoon, whenever you're listening to this. You know, hopefully you get to spend some great time with your family, play some football, watch some football, all that great stuff. Bear down and have a lovely evening, Chicago.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smart Water Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smart Water Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.